Welcome to episode 502 of the Entertainment 2.0 podcast, brought to you by the DigitalMediaZone.com. I am Richard Gunther, and this is the show that puts you in control of your favorite movies, music, shows, and games. And we're missing the voice of Josh Pollard for this particular episode, but we have our favorite guest, Mr. James Montemagno.
How's it going, buddy? And we were really searching deep for someone to come replace Josh, and we had to reach way back in the ethos of all people that have ever done any podcast on the Digital Media Zone, and this schmuck decides to say yes. So it's an honor and a privilege to be here with you, Richard. It's been a long time, and I've missed you.
Look, you know this show. You used to do this show with Josh, and when you're on, we get such good feedback. So I'm excited about it. I'm just ashamed that I don't have the setup for us to do this live, but we'll try and get the video out so everybody can enjoy seeing your pretty face while we're talking through all this cool tech news, all right?
Yeah, and you can have me on more often. It doesn't have to be once every 5 years, by the way.
Fair point.
You know, I do a lot of podcasting, a lot of speaking. I like to talk about entertainment. Now, I do want to say something. I'd have one question, though.
Okay.
If this is the show that puts you in control of your favorite movies, how are you and Josh putting the listeners in control? I'm curious, because it says in the name, it puts you in control.
Putting me on the spot here. Well, what we're hoping we can do is share with our listeners as much information as possible so they can make the right choices and they know where to turn to get the tools to help them do just that. So that's our hope, and I hope we're accomplishing that.
I like that. That's good. And also, if our listeners want more James, you are in control of how much James. It's the James dial. You know, do you just want a 1 or do you want 11?
You just have to do is like use that James hashtag on Twitter and we'll see it. Don't worry about it. So
there you go.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's get started with some feedback. People send us feedback at our email address at entertainment2.0@thedigitalmediazone.com. The first is from Papa Pete. And he says, I think it would be remiss that Entertainment 2.0 hasn't mentioned what I think is one of the most important MS Gaming advances this year. And I apologize if you have. I don't think we have. So let's dive into this. Microsoft Flight Simulator was first released in 1976 for the TRS-80. That's the computer that I learned how to program on. Unfortunately, I am old enough to have owned one, he says. Microsoft took over the license in 82 and continued developing it until 2009. However, at E3, they announced that they'd been working on a new version to be released first on PC and then Xbox. The alpha exists, and I encourage all gamers to look at the many videos that have been released. I cannot use words to explain the advance in real-world visual rendering, you just have to view the many released 4K videos, and this advanced simulation of the entire Earth is only possible because of Azure, Bing Maps, and Xbox Cloud. He sent us a link, and I looked at the video, and it is damned impressive. Really, really cool. And he said, this is just one of the many videos. Please watch. It's only 9 minutes. And I understand that all you see is rendered simulation. He says, P.S. I believe even non-gamer and Apple fan Richard will be impressed with what Microsoft has achieved so far. And it's not even beta, only very early alpha. Yeah, it's cool. I don't know if you've seen any of this stuff yet, but it's really cool, James.
Yeah, I watched the video. I do happen to work for Microsoft, but I don't work in our game division or anything like that. However, we do get, you know, updates all the time about some of the cool things in the company that are happening. We get a lot of email. And yeah, I mean, Flight Simulator itself, I remember growing up having some of the early flight simulators on my Windows 95 machine growing up, and also at the Living Computer Museum in SoDo, which, have you been to the...
I have yet to go there.
So Living Computer Museum, it's in Seattle, so it is south of downtown, so SoDo. So it was created in concept by Paul Allen, R.I.P. Paul Allen.
Yep.
And it is a two-factor. They just redid it the last 2 or 3 years. The top floor is all of the old mainframe computers and legacy computers, and everything is not only working, but also interactive. So they have old PDPs, they have old like TRS-80s, they have all the games, a floppy disk, they have everything that you can play. Do you want to play original Flight Simulator? Do you want to play Oregon Trail? Do you want to touch an Apple II? They have everything there. They have the lease, they have everything. That's, you know, crazy. What I mean? And then they have history things. And on the bottom floor, they just redid it to be like live, interactive with like AI, and they have like a Forza thing, and they have like, you know, augmented reality and Oculus and all that jazz, you know, for the kids. You got to get the kids in the door. So a lot of cool educational items in there too, which is always fun to see how a lot of that technology came about. But even for the other nerds and geeks like me, they have all these cool infographics of the most popular operating systems and programming languages and things that are still in use and when they were created. So all these really cool things up on the wall. So it's delightful. It used to be, I think, like $5 to go. And I think now it's $12 or something. But it's definitely worth your time if you're ever in Seattle. It's down just a little bit south of the stadiums. We call it SoDo, south of downtown. Would highly recommend you do it. And yeah, I agree. Like this game looks spectacular. The team is doing wonderful things. I'm blown away. I'm gonna see if I can contact someone on the team and get a hands-on on this puppy, what they're doing. But it is very impressive, not only the rendering of the Earth, but the dimension that they add, I think, is really impressive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very, very cool. So it'll be exciting to see what they ultimately come up with. So thanks for sending that in. I appreciate it. And if you have some feedback that you'd like to share with us, you can send it to us at entertainment20@thedigitalmediazone.com. All right, well, let us dive into our video news. And we'll start with the NVIDIA Shield, believe it or not. This is a device that I don't personally have, but from your excited hand motions, James, I suspect you're a fan, yeah?
I am. I've been using an NVIDIA Shield at my house for, it feels like four years now, I want to say. Mm-hmm. I've been an Android TV. In fact, the last time I came on the show, I think I had talked about that I had the Nexus TV from Google, but then I was transitioning into the NVIDIA Shield. Now, that was a few years ago. So I've been a proud NVIDIA Shield owner for many a years. A great, great box. And I use it with my Logitech Harmony remote flawlessly, very well, mostly flawlessly. We can talk about that in a second.
Yeah, and Josh has an NVIDIA Shield too, and he's a big fan. This was his primary device until we started taking a deeper look at the TiVo devices with the trial units that we had there. So they have new devices out. They're available now. They have a really weird design. The one looks kind of like the older one. That's the pro version. It's the more capable version. And you can stand it on end where it can lay flat. It has like this same sort of weird orthogonal design that it had going on before. The less expensive one, I think, looks like a pipe bomb.
It looks like the Echo, no? The old Echo tube? But skinnier.
But much like thinner. Bomb. Yeah. I mean, it looks like a thin tube. You plug Ethernet and power go in one end, and HDMI comes out the other. And I guess it's too cool. Heavy to actually like dangle it from your TV. So you kind of need to use a regular HDMI cable on it and then have it down on the floor or something like that. It will probably literally roll around if you don't secure it. And if that's not weird enough, the new remote for these things has three sides.
Mm-hmm. And more buttons than the old one, which had like one button on it, by the way.
Yeah, well, so that's a good thing, though, right? Yes. I'm a big one for buttons. This is a very capable remote. It actually looks like it's a good form factor. And from the reviews, a lot of people say it's surprisingly comfortable in the hand because even though it's three-sided, the corners of it are all rounded nicely. So really good ergonomics. It's a Bluetooth and IR remote. It has a microphone on for accessing the Google Assistant. It has lighted buttons that activate when you pick it up, which is very smart. And it basically lays on its side, if you will, or one of its backs, so that when it's laying on, say, the arm of your sofa, the buttons are facing you, which is oddly and brilliantly smart.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. And in fact, that if you were to point it at yourself, you would see the buttons light up towards you, even if you were to maybe at the end of the day, put it by your television, but point it towards you. You could always have it sort of shine a light on you when it came your way.
It's kind of wild. So I understand you can also just buy the new remote if you have the old boxes. I think that's available as like a $30 upgrade or something like that if you wanted that. But the new boxes come in at $150 and $200 roughly each, for the lower capable and the pro version. The lower one is 2 gig of RAM, 8 gig of memory. It has a micro SD slot in it, so that's where your games are going to be. There's no real way of otherwise adding any sort of external expansion there. And then the Pro version has all the ports. It has the two USB-A ports, and then it also has additional memory, 3 gig of RAM and 16 gig of memory. So pretty nice offering there. Also on the Tegra processor. And that's good, because I don't think anyone else is buying that these days. But it seems to be pretty capable for this device, and everybody that's been reviewing it seems to love it.
Yeah, I want to mention that this is actually the upgraded Tegra X1 Plus processor. Now, fascinating, we'll talk about it later. While there might not be too many people, there may be around 43 million other people using this Tegra chip, because it's the same system on a chip that the Nintendo Switch uses.
Ah. And
yes. Now, the original Shield and the original classic Nintendo Switch uses that original Tegra chip. However, the new Switch Lite and the upgraded models, newer models of the Switch, use the Tegra X1 Plus. Now, it's not a crazy boost. However, it is a dramatic reduction in power consumption, which is very important for heat dispersion, which is somehow how they put it in this crazy tube. I do want to say, though, that the most impressive part of this is that they're promising up to 25 more performance. And additionally, this system on a chip will use AI to automatically scale your 1080p content up to 4K if it is coming out on that resolution. And it will use AI built into the chip to actually do that processing over standard, however they scale the stuff, you know, up basically. But they're going to create profiles for streaming video to improve lower res up to higher res if you need it, which is very cool about this. They call it a AI powered upscaler on it. It also supports Dolby Vision HDR, Dolby's Atmos. And these are all things that I don't have. And it even does have dual band Wi-Fi. So there is a lot into this thing if you were just getting it. The old one, garbage. This one, awesome.
No. Obviously not garbage.
No. I don't know if I would upgrade, though. And here's why. I think that this is a great product. I think that $149, I'd probably get the Pro still, because for an extra $50, why not? Kind of future-proof it.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good price.
Yeah, and you're getting the same processor and everything. For me, I haven't really seen my Android TV slow down at all. I have all the features. It would be the same form factor, basically, for this Shield TV Pro for $200. And if I was coming in today wanting to upgrade from a Roku or something, I say go for it. However, everything is butter smooth, and I don't have a 4K TV. So
yeah, I think that's what it comes down to, right? Like, I think it comes down to, do you want the additional performance for gaming? And do you want all of the newer video bells and whistles and audio bells and whistles, like the Dolby Vision and the Dolby Atmos? Because if you have that capability, that is really compelling to all be included in that $200 box.
Yeah, it's super impressive. And I'm really impressed with mine. So if you're in the market and you were holding off, or maybe you're like, hey, I'm thinking about changing over or upgrading with all these new features and everything in there, definitely worth it. So That's my opinion. And also because the reviews have been really, really good on it. And that's great. And I think that, honestly, Android TV is a relatively spectacular operating system for the TV. I'm very impressed with it. A lot of customization kind of on your home screen is very customized for what you're looking for. You know, I'll be intrigued to see what happens with Disney Plus and some of the new things we're going to talk about with like Apple TV and HBO and all the other streaming services, and seeing if the Android TV will get it. Because one thing, for better or worse, is the Android TV did not get the new Hulu, which some may say worst Hulu ever created. Not that it's the worst, but honestly, navigating Hulu is like, I don't understand who designed it, because the old Hulu was very generic, straightforward, gray, and it worked.
I don't
great.
Understand. You mean you don't like just being able to see only three titles at once? That's not useful for you? Come on. Everything's supposed to be big now. You know, you just don't understand, James. No, I still hate it. I think it's getting better. They have toned it down a little bit and refined it over the past couple years, and they have finally diverged the tablet and 10-foot views, which is good. Honestly, the Hulu website is way, way, way better than what you get when you use these 10-foot interfaces that they have. So, yeah, I don't think that's a big loss if you don't have that. But you're right. Disney Plus, not currently scheduled to come to the Google TV devices. So we'll see what happens there.
Yeah, I'll be intrigued because I already have a 3-year of Disney Plus when that special happens.
Yeah. So.
I just want to watch my Mandalorian. That's all I care about. Well, there's one place where we won't be watching the Mandalorian, and that is anywhere on the PlayStation View. Because one, it's a completely different streaming service, but two, it's shutting down in January. Yeah, Sony, the PlayStation View, which was a streaming television service, you may have heard of it. Its main competitors would be Hulu TV, YouTube TV, Sling, basically everybody else that's in the live streaming community, was a big competitor of the PlayStation View. And this was strange because Sony had a huge push for the PlayStation View. And in fact, I heard when I was doing research about a year ago for my father-in-law, when we were researching television streaming for him, and we ended up going with the Direct, and now he's, I think, on Spectrum or something, because he wanted to cut the cord, and we bought him a Roku. We were researching, he's a sports guy, and I was reading that PlayStation View was the best streaming service for sports. That is what I heard on all of the reviews that were out there. Now, they are officially shutting this down. This does follow Music Unlimited, the Sony Picture Store, like a kind of.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, goes, Sony, right? The serial digital service quitter.
Yep. What are they? Google? Come on. Yeah, just another one, right? But they did, I mean, understandably, they announced that they had 500,000 subscribers, which to me, I heard, wow, that's impressive. And then I was like, no, actually, that's not impressive at all.
Right,
which
and
is,
they also
sad.
Mentioned that it's not a moneymaker for them, right? It was not profitable. And ultimately, you can't carry that for all that long. And the other thing that we've seen is all of these services that were supposed to be the savior of cable TV ended up bumping up their rates and bumping up their rates again. And so, you know, this idea that for $40, you could get everything that you were previously paying $80 for is just not sustainable. And you know, like I said, this is yet another case of Sony realizing that they aren't really a good content delivery company. That's not what they do well. What I don't understand is why every license holder feels compelled, if you will, to open their own store, to be their own boss, to have their own place that people cut, because there are only so many places that people are going to go. And we're going to talk about yet another service that is going to be opening later next year. And I'm banging my head against the wall because it's like, come on already. We have enough places. Just put the stuff in the places.
Yeah. You know, I really liked what I agree. There's always too many places. And I always thought it was very complicated. And Especially when it comes to TV, there was just so many varieties, and everyone was just slightly different. And then you're right, like every single movie maker and every single big house, they're going to have their own streaming service. They're going to do this. And just as consumers, we can't comprehend it. In fact, that's why I liked, Movies Unlimited? Is that the one? Movies Anywhere? Movies Anywhere. That's
Movies
the
Anywhere
one
that pulls all of your, almost all, not all the studios are participating yet. Paramount is still out. Lionsgate is still out. But if you purchase digital movies before, either on Ultraviolet or through Disney Movies Anywhere, then those have kind of all converged into that one service that, guess what? Disney was doing it right from the beginning.
Yeah. I was very impressed by it, that I could shove my iTunes on it, shove my Google Play, shove my Vudu on it. And I did all these disc to digitals. It was the reason I did all my disc to digitals, because of that service.
Yep.
And I said, you know what? Like, I own all of these. Why do I have 15 different apps? Like, it's not like they're getting money for streaming this movie that I already purchased, you know, like anymore. It doesn't make any sense. So I'm very glad that thing exists, and that it just sort of all weaves together. But I do think that you know, the music industry, it took them a while to figure it out too. And, you know, at this point, they've kind of figured it out. I mean, it's not perfect, but it is a lot better. And it'll take a big disruptor in the field that's not one of these big companies to do it. I don't know who that is. But no one seems to be winning it. But I don't know what the end goal will be, because I am a big fan of the cord cutter. We have Hulu with ads. We went down to Hulu with ads, like animals.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. We said, you know what?
Do we need to start sending you money?
You're going to save. It was, the thing was, when it was like a $3 difference, we go, oh, that's fine. But then it was dramatically a $7 difference.
Yeah, it became significantly different.
And I said, okay, well, and we decided, like, well, let's do it for a few months. And if we hate it, we'll bump it back up. And then we sort of decided it's kind of nice to take a break every once in a while. Get up, you know, make a coffee, make some popcorn. And it's not the worst. It's not the great. If the Hulu app was better at playing ads, and ads that were actually relevant, that would be better. But they're really not. And that's the one issue we mostly have with it. But then we're T-Mobile subscribers, so we also get Netflix for free. So really, we're only paying... I did the upgraded Netflix, but we're only paying $7 a month for all of our streaming services, which is quite... In fact, I pay less for streaming video services than I do for my music, because I pay $10 for the YouTube premium or whatever. So that's actually quite impressive. Yeah. Anyways, Sony, I'm sorry you also named it wrong. PlayStation View. Terrible name.
What?
Terrible name.
Oh, what? What? Why? Why didn't they call it just View or Sony View or what's anything other than tying it to the PlayStation brand? It was like, in my opinion, when Microsoft was branding everything media related Xbox, which they eventually learned wasn't a good idea.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, like something like Sony View TV. That'd been kind of cool. I'd been into that. That'd been better. You got to put TV in the name. Hulu TV, YouTube TV.
Yeah.
Just saying.
Yep.
Like Apple TV.
Hey.
Plus.
Wow. It's almost like you handed that to me. All right. Well, let's talk about Apple TV Plus, because after literally years of anticipation, it is now out and available, all 9 titles.
Ooh, nice.
Right. So here's where it's
selling it.
Kind
of selling it.
Falls down, right? Like, okay, so, you know, it's cool. They have their own content. That's all it is. Apple TV Plus is only about their own content. They're not licensing other content. They're producing all their own content. They have one movie. It's awesome. They have 8 series. 3 of them are targeted to kids. They are going to have, eventually, much, much more. But in my opinion, it's a good thing it's free for anyone that buys Apple devices pretty regularly, because I can't imagine even paying the $5 a month that they want for just 9 things. That's ridiculous.
Yeah, it's a bummer. And now, I'm assuming you watched the movie. And also the series, they're doing it comes out once a week type of thing. Is that correct?
Right. So they seeded a couple of them with 3 episodes, and then they'll be doing them serially. I believe, however, for some of the other shows, they released more episodes right up front, except for the, you know, like these big titles that people were really waiting for, like C and For All Mankind and The Morning Show. Those all just have three ads. Now, the other cool thing is that you can taste the service by watching the first two episodes of anything free.
Hmm.
So you don't have to sign up to watch the first two episodes of things to decide if you want it. And that's kind of similar to what HBO and Showtime, I believe, both do, where you can go to their sites and just watch the pilot of each series and decide if you want to subscribe or not.
Now, let me ask you a question, Richard. Can I get this on my Android device? Can I watch this on my Android phone? How does that work?
No.
Oh, okay. What about on my computer? Can I just watch it on my Windows computer somehow? Is that a possibility?
No, but would I be violating any sort of trust if I let people know that you could watch it on the Mac that you're using right now?
Oh, okay. I could do that. How about that?
You could do that. You could watch it in Safari on a Mac. Oh. You can watch it on any Apple device. You can watch it on Roku. You can watch it on Fire TV devices and Samsung and Sony TVs, and Vizio is going to be coming as well.
That's pretty good. I mean, I do like that they're opening up the TV to more. And, you know, I think this is really a long play for Apple. I've listened to in-and-outs, all sorts of things. It's hard to launch a service with such limited content, but really, to anyone that's in the know, that's the problem, is if you're not in the know, and what by in the know, I mean, you maybe read tech blogs or watch some YouTube videos from The Verge or Engadget or maybe the Digital Media Zone, and you nice understand bucket. That. Yeah, you're welcome. That's what I do. So that's why they pay me the big bucks. And for all intents and purposes, they're really just giving it away for free so they can take that year to build the content. Because you know what? Content takes time and money.
Yep.
Unlike, you know, especially if you're doing it yourself, unlike the Apple Arcade, which, I mean, we talk about it on our podcast too, they just nailed that in general. They said, what a great job. And they didn't have to produce that content. Other people were creating the games and they worked with them, finalize it. And that's a lot easier to all of that. So I'm sort of surprised they didn't do the Netflix approach, which is kind of like buying stuff, right? Stuff that they just, Netflix originally, they produce their own, but a lot of times they just buy stuff, right? Mm-hmm. That's how I feel. Mm-hmm. I'm sort of shocked. But of course, that wouldn't be Apple. That's why they didn't do it. Tim, that's why.
Not the Apple way. So, you know, I'll be curious if this has longevity, but so far, what I've seen is pretty good. We'll talk about that a little bit more when we're talking about what's going on in our entertainment centers. But I really think you're right. This is about how this is looking in about a year or so after people are past their initial free trial.
Yeah. Now, if you are, though, looking for a different service, because we all need another service in our lives,
we'll have one more, a
plethora, of content. In fact, it may have a box office full of them. HBO Max will be bringing streaming everywhere May 2020 for just a little bit. $15 a month. It's the same as every HBO that you've ever paid for. I don't think there's been a time in my life, which is impressive, that HBO has not been $15.
Right. Whether you buy it online, whether you subscribe from your cable service, it doesn't matter. It's $15.
Yes, it's always there. Now, it's the same as HBO now. It's the same as HBO. And in fact, if you already pay for HBO on a provider, let's say a Comcast of the world, Cox Internet, something like that, you would get HBO Max for free, inside of it.
Even if that's through like your wireless provider. So, for example, I have AT&T TV or AT&T Watch TV, which is the free cable station streaming service that you get with them as if they're a provider. And that comes free when you buy their unlimited service plan with a wireless plan. And I get HBO with that. So I'll end up getting this for free as well, but it's one more place.
It's true. But, you know, it's not TV. It's HBO.
Oh, man. So one more thing I want to talk about on this, which I think is worth discussing. Everybody's like, well, wait a minute. It's the same price as HBO, but it's more than HBO. Yes and no. This is not a superset of HBO Now or HBO Go. It's more of an intersection between the two. So while you'll get all of the HBO series and originals, and you're going to get all this new stuff, what the movies that you're going to get, from what I can tell so far, appear to be limited to the Warner universe. Everything that they're talking about in terms of exclusive access to movies, just like with HBO, every title they've listed is distributed by a Warner or Warner-owned studio. So it's what you're not going to get is all of those other movies that you normally see on HBO that they license from other provider, other studios.
I guess you're going to need to get the NBC Peacock or the Hulu or the Netflix or the other thing or the Whiz Bang or the XYZ.
Why not,
but
right?
Yeah, you gotta call. Now, that doesn't sound like a max though. That sounds like HBO middle. we're somewhere in the middle. We're not minimum. We're not maximum. Right in the middle. But I will say one thing that's cool on top of what you said is while this is going to be a paid version in 2020. If you want to wait longer, which I will, you can wait till 2021, in which they will launch a ad-supported version. Now, they didn't exactly describe how this will work. My assumption is it'll work very much like the Hulu ad-supported tier, and that's pretty cool if that does work.
As long as it works the way the Hulu ad-supported stuff does, and not like the Vudu ad-supported stuff does, which just randomly at no logical time interjects a commercial in most cases for Vudu's commercial service.
I do like when I'm watching Hulu and then Hulu does an ad for Hulu. I'm like, I already have you, Hulu. I'm watching this on Hulu. And
right.
one thing about Hulu that they do is they only do ads interjected for television, which they do at the correct times, almost always, unless it's like a Hulu original, then they still film original shows as if there are commercial breaks. That's how I feel, you know, nowadays anyways. But when you play movies on Hulu, they only play an ad in the beginning and that's it.
Right.
That's nice. So,
right. That is nice. That is nice. Yeah. Vudu should learn from that.
Now I will. Yeah. I will say, like, I've always been intrigued in getting HBO because I always want to watch Westworld. Like, that's the show I want to watch. So I know season 3 is coming at some point, and the ways I've gotten it in the past has always been waiting till it's done with the season and then figuring out some other subscription service which gives you a month free of HBO.
Yep.
Now, like Amazon did that with Prime, and I did it some other way. It's like very hacky. I'm like, we got to watch all of Westworld right now. Let's go. And, you know, so I would be apt to maybe even give HBO $15 for a month or so of it once Westworld season 3 comes out, or watching Westworld with ads. I would do that too. And they'd probably make more money off of the ads than the $15, maybe. Maybe. I don't know. I don't know how that works.
Hard to tell.
Yeah.
But if you're the kind of person who doesn't like ads, but you like radio, chances are you converted from terrestrial radio to Sirius or XM years ago. They merged, so now you're probably on Sirius XM, and I wish they had fewer syllables and consonants in that, because I really hate saying that. They now finally have their service available to working with the Google Assistant. So that means now you can ask your Google Assistant to play whatever channel on SiriusXM, and it will. I already hate that you have to tell it on SiriusXM, because that seems really convoluted, and I wish they'd be able to parse that better just based on the actual channel names, but maybe they're not unique enough. I don't know. But this is a good thing. It works on any of the audio devices, as well as devices with screens. And sometime next year, they expect to also be coming out with a service that may include things like exclusive interviews and videos and stuff like that, that would work on the devices that have screens. And I don't know if you're aware of this or not, James, but I now have I think it's now called the Nest Hub, sitting on my nightstand as an alarm clock. And I love it. I think it is a great device. And I even like listening to audio on it and the artwork that it shows and everything. It just handles that very, very smoothly. And I think that's a good thing. Now, of course, the bad news here is that if you don't subscribe to a SiriusXM package that allows you to listen to your music online, then you're not going to be able to use this. You have to have that online add-on for this to be available to you.
Man, SiriusXM, the original, one of the original subscriptions. I mean, I think HBO, I think of as one of the original like add-on subscription services, right? Because like TV, I never thought of it right. as a subscription. It was like something you have to have, but then HBO is always that extra, right? Man, Sirius, like, man, they've been doing it for so long. It's very impressive in general. I used to have XM and Sirius way back in the day when I had a car that was all fancy and whatnot. And I put one of those little dashboards in there. I was like, wow, it's so cool. And I remember like renting cars, like, oh, I can listen to anything right now. I don't anymore, but I will say this is cool. But also, fun fact, last time I think you had me on, I was talking about how I, you know, made everything like Google Assistant aware and Hue's aware and all this stuff. Mm-hmm. I have all these smart devices, but I've turned off all of the assistants, all of them. So I'm very privacy aware now.
Oh, okay.
This is my new thing. I've watched too many Snowden videos, I think, and read too many articles on how everything is tracking us all the time. But which I knew, I just didn't want to believe. But it's funny now when I ask my dingus, I have one of the Lenovo smart displays, which is lovely. It shows great photos.
Yep.
On it. I really, really love that. And whenever I ask the dingus for anything but the weather, it's just, oh, I can't do that, right? But I can still Chromecast to it, and I love Chromecasting stuff to it. So Chromecasting YouTube or Hulu or Netflix or something to it as a smart screen is nice. So it's a little bit better than those old picture frames. So there is some smart in it. But beyond that, yeah, I've turned off everything. I'm like, no. And we also, though, put the John Legend voice on it. So then John Legend tells us that I need to go configure Google Assistant. It's great. I highly recommend everyone turn off everything. That's my plan. But also, if you have some devices that aren't Google Assistant or Siri or Echo enabled, maybe like an old Sonos device. This is my favorite article of the week because, oh boy, I booted it up and I saw the photos of these Sonos devices and I remember these Sonos devices. I had friends that had these Sonos devices. If you remember the old classic Sonos devices, the Kinect Amp ZP80, 90, 100, 120, or even the first generation Play 5s, for instance.
Yeah. And those controllers that had the wheels on them that were kind of like an iPod, actually.
Yep. Mm-hmm. I remember these are the old Sonos classics. They look like a big iPod mini. You know what I mean? Like the aluminum. And then, yeah, the big with the dock. Oh, man, what a great device. You got to get rid. It's time. You got to upgrade. Your friends are coming over and they're like, what is this? You know, it's got a web 2.0 skeuomorphism design on it. It's time. And in fact, Sonos agrees. They will give you 30% discount just get rid of it. They'll give you 30% off any of those that I just listed that you can upgrade to one of the new Sonos devices, such as the Sonos One or One SL. If you want, you can head over and register on the Sonos website, and they'll go in and do all that stuff. And you can go basically go to town on upgrading your surround sound system. It's 2019 going to 2020, people. Time to upgrade that tech.
It is, but it's funny because one of the things that I remember from the original controllers is that they were so easy to use. And I'm one of the people who continues to dislike every change that they make to further burden their web apps and their apps that they have on devices to look more like the design sense that they have on their website, which is pretty, but not necessarily functional. And so as they continue to veer further away from how you expect an app to look and behave and continue to do all this creative stuff, which is harder to use and not as consistent, I would say, with everything else that you're using, I kind of miss the old controllers. And I, my friend Chris, who's been on the show, Chris Milligan's been on the show a couple times. He is the person who I blame for getting me sucked into the Sonos world. He still has one or two of those original wheel controllers in his home. They still work, and except for two or three of the features on them that Sonos has deprecated, Sonos still supports them.
Yeah, this is clearly a play to stop supporting devices, which makes complete sense. I mean, at some point, you really want to deprecate those old devices. You got engineers working on stuff.
These things are like over 10 years old.
Yeah, it's impressive. It's impressive that they still work. And there's, I mean, I will say, I mean, it's always great when a piece of technology, isn't it great though, when a piece of technology that you bought like a decade ago, like just continues to work? Like my Harmony remote, you know, I got the Harmony Ultimate. It must have been like 5 or 6 years ago though. And it has a touchscreen on it. And boy, that puppy works. And it was one of the first ones that had Bluetooth in it. So it works really well with my Shield and stuff. And
Works great. I love that device.
That great device
had great ergonomics too. That was the last remote they made that had really good hand feel, really good ergonomics there. I didn't like the arrangement of the buttons necessarily, but it was a great remote. My Ultimate, the rubber on the back of it eventually started breaking down because rubber over time degrades and starts to become sticky, which is actually not good for you. If you have something with rubber on it and the rubber is sticky, that doesn't wash off. That means the rubber is degrading, and that's bad to expose yourself to that. Time to get rid of it.
Yeah.
So I have since moved on from that remote, but you're right. They're great. These older devices sometimes are hard to live up to with some of the newer tech that's out there. Now, the one thing that I want to just kind of put out here, yes, it's awesome that they're giving a 30% discount on new devices. It's really smart. It works pretty much all the way up to the old 5, and that's not that old of a device, really. So that's kind of cool that they're supporting that. The new 5, the new amp, the new port, those are the devices that replace the old 5, the old Kinect amp, and the old Kinect devices. They're all more expensive than the older ones. So that's eating up like somewhere between, I don't know, maybe 12 to 17% of that discount. Just keep that in mind because it's not that big of a savings when you think of the fact that, okay, well, these new ones cost $100 more or $50 more or whatever else than the originals did.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, they probably do more though. So you got to do that trade off, but
they do.
I would be fascinated to know if there is like sort of a black market for these devices in which people are really seeking them out, trying to find them, and are they actually worth quite a lot on eBay? I didn't do any research ahead of the show.
Like Chris has bought extras on eBay because you can't find them anymore. Yeah. Yes, absolutely. There is a market for these old things.
So maybe if you have them and you really want to upgrade, maybe check out eBay first and try to sell them.
You might be able to do better. Who knows?
Yeah.
All right. Well, there's one more story in the audio section here, and that is that's with our friends at Axim. I think we know these guys, don't you?
I do know them quite well.
Yeah. Funny about that. Okay. So Axim, we've talked about them in the past. Axim is a system that allows you to get wireless surround around your home. These are WiSA speakers that conform to the WiSA specification, and you can enjoy surround in a completely wireless scenario, which is just amazing. Well, they came out with the USB wireless audio transmitter about a year or so ago, and at the time, it was about connecting to the Xbox. And we said, okay, that's nice. I don't know how much I really care about wireless audio with my Xbox. Well, they just announced that they are now collaborating with LG Electronics so that 2019 WiSA Ready TVs can use the audio transmitter to then take advantage of the wireless sound that the Axim system offers. So this is a really, really cool new partnership, and hopefully the first of many. I mean, I hope that they don't end up doing something that's so exclusive that it doesn't give consumers more options. Now, everybody knows I love me some LG TVs. I'm not going to fight back against those, but not everybody has or wants an LG TV. And so hopefully this will expand to other brands sometime in the future.
Yeah, this is a pretty neato. I did own one of the original Axum surround sound systems. It for me in an apartment, it didn't make a lot of sense. It also, I mean, they are wireless, but you still got to power them. So there are wires.
Right. And it's kind of like, the Sonos system.
Yeah.
Right. But Sonos isn't really designed to the specification. Well, certainly not to the Wyze specification, but to meet the specs and the demand that Wyze speakers are designed to meet.
Yeah. And what I like here is, I really did enjoy my wireless surround sound system. So I really enjoyed it. I thought it was a beautiful setup. I thought the speakers look great. The newer ones even look even better. But what I appreciate here is that for me, I didn't like having to have like yet another box sitting around. And if I understand it, correct me if I'm wrong, my dream here would be to plug things into my TV and then my TV then stream this audio via the USB to everything. So like the TV kind of becomes the hub. Is that kind of what this is doing here? Because that's what it was with the Xbox, right? It was the Xbox would stream over this. So my imagining is that I can pipe even my Shield TV into my television and then it would pipe the audio out via this wireless audio transmitter. Is that correct?
Yeah, I believe that's exactly how that would work. So this is going to be something that you just plug via USB into your television and the TV is going to recognize it and say, okay, let's see what devices you have and what speakers you have and set it all up for you if you haven't. And then, of course, they also have a mobile app that allows you to fine tune that, kind of like some of the surround sound AV receivers that use a mobile app to assist with that as well. So it's a good solution. I'm excited about it. I know that Josh has tested this. I think he has the first end, then had that replaced with the second generation version that they came out with. So I don't know if this is something that he'll test, though, because he has a Vizio TV and it's an older model. I doubt that really any of these manufacturers of televisions are going to go and retroactively update their older models with Wyze conforming firmware. I think that's unlikely.
No, that's going to completely unlikely. Nobody will ever. No television maker. It's not in their interest on a yearly update cycle, right, to do any of that. It's all about selling the new model for it.
Although, in all fairness, Apple managed to get major manufacturers to at least go back to their 2018 models.
That's
and
true.
Vizio is even going back to their 2017 models to provide AirPlay 2 support. So it probably depends on the demand, right? There's obviously plenty of demand right now for AirPlay. Is there going to be that kind of demand for Wyze? Probably less so, largely because I think Wyze is very smartly targeting a higher price audience.
Yeah, it's a prosumer level of it. And yeah, and that's also how much money is behind it, too. I think Apple has a little bit of money to throw it around, so, too. But that's pretty cool. Now, shifting gears a little bit, let's head over to the games. My section, I do love the games. And, you know, I know we talk a lot about, you know, entertainment things, a lot of Microsofty things. But, you know, I love me some Nintendo. I got a whole podcast on Nintendo.
Yeah, Nintendo Dispatch. This is the first time we've talked about Nintendo since maybe the last time you've been on.
Oh, probably, yeah. So if you listen, I do a podcast, Nintendo Dispatch.com. You can go listen to it. It's weekly, all things Nintendo. Now we had just talked about this this week, and I thought it was bringing up because you know Nintendo had just come out with the Switch Lite. I thought that this was really cool because it's using the same processor as the Shield. You know, when you think about your television is more than just video consumption. It is TV, but it's also on the go. I'm a huge fan of the Nintendo Switch. I think it's an amazing console. It's the only console that I own, by the way. I don't own anything else besides a computer. But it has now officially shifted nearly 42 million consoles worldwide. And it's at 41.67 million consoles, which is quite impressive for a console that's only been out for a little over 2.5 years. It just surpassed 10 million in Japan alone. And the Nintendo Switch Lite sold 2 million units in 10 days. And that Switch Lite, which I own, by the way, as well as a Nintendo Switch. Of course I do. I own multiple. I pre-ordered all of them. Shifted 2 million units in 10 days, which is very impressive in general. The Switch Lite, by the way, fantastic portable console. If you are looking for just a new handheld, it is spectacular. The battery life on it, the screen on it, the weight of it feels better in my hand than like if I have my Pixel 2 XL here, if you're watching the video later. But it feels one a billion times better, but also just the ergonomics of it and the weight feel just superb in the hand. It's very, very impressive. And the game selection is spectacular on the Switch. Now, it's not a powerhouse, it's not an Xbox, but it's not trying to be. I will say that I do love the ability to play it anywhere. But I think it's very impressive the amount of consoles that it's selling. And I love me some Nintendo. So, you know, that's what I'm about.
There was some concern when they announced the Switch Lite that it might cannibalize the Switch market itself. Do you think that's really going to happen, or do you think that this is trying to broaden the existing market?
I think it's all about broadening the existing market. I think it's streamlining their production. I think that the Switch Lite is cheaper to produce, so it's got a cheaper price point. It doesn't have the detachable Joy-Cons and the sleds and the different body parts on it that need to slide in and out and that aspect of it. Overall, I believe that the Switch Lite is a great handheld for anyone that's on the go, but also for the second or third or fourth Switch in the house. And there's a lot of families, right? And a lot of families would buy the DS or the 3DS, and they'd buy multiple of them. And at $300, the Switch itself is not in the position to be a console that you can buy multiple of them. And in a lot of households where there maybe is one television or two television, this is a great place to kind of step in. So I don't think it'll really cannibalize it as far as it goes. They are really positioning it well, and they need to tell, that's the thing, is that it really comes down to marketing and telling the story that doesn't confuse the consumer. But so far they've done a good job, in my personal opinion, with it. My concern will be if they don't lower the price point at some point of the Switch to maybe be $250 in general, because the $100 gap right now is quite large between the two, for that extra feature of it being docked. So I could hope that maybe they come out with a new flavor of the dock, which reduces their price. That would maybe bring it down $50. So you're at $250 and $200. And then, you know, it's really, or maybe $179 or something like that. But I do think at $200, it is going to fly off the shelves this Christmas. It's just going to be ridiculous.
And does Nintendo tend to do the same sort of thing at Xbox, at Christmas that Xbox does, where they tend to discount through packages and things like that, or do they keep their prices pretty steady?
No, they're all about keeping it steady. Nintendo is the master of supply and demand, and always having not enough on stock to keep things.
I was going to say, level. I don't know what you're talking about. They're always out of stock.
Yeah, but that's the game, right? The game is not to have too many in stock, I guess. What they usually do for Black Friday, so the day after Thanksgiving, is they will include. Like a game at the same price, though. They'll be like, here's a free Mario Kart. That's usually what they do. And once those are gone, then they're gone. So it is like a bundle, but it's usually not a bundle plus a discount. Usually. It's usually the same. So
you're getting like a free add-on as opposed to bringing the price down.
Yeah, which is smart from them, because what does a free digital download cost them? The bandwidth cost of the file, right? So,
well, yeah, but it is another user on the system. That's potentially, yeah, but okay. Yeah. No, that's cool. That's cool.
Yeah. You don't own any Switches?
Well,
no?
I don't. No. I do, however, own an Xbox.
Oh,
and
okay.
If you're in the Xbox camp and you just didn't necessarily want to spend the several hundred dollars that it takes to get yourself a new Xbox One X or One S, you can be looking forward to the resurfacing of Xbox All Access. Now, you may remember this is the service where for approximately starting at $20 a month for 2 years, you're kind of paying off the cost of the console, but it's also bundled with Game Pass Ultimate and Xbox Live. So you get all that stuff together. You're paying for it monthly at $20 a month as a starting price. It goes up depending on the console that you have and its capabilities. They're also going to have an option so that you can upgrade the Xbox One X to the Project Scarlet device when that is available at the end of next year, which is really cool. Now, that's likely going to be a paid upgrade, but the idea is that, kind of like phones now, I have a phone option where I pay monthly for my phone, and then when the new phone comes out next year, I just swap it in and I get the new one. So that's kind of a nice thing if you don't necessarily want to be stockpiling old Xboxes around your house.
Yeah, this someone crunched the numbers on this, and overall, I believe it's not a bad deal. I think that it's
right
similar to what you would end up paying if you went all the way. You're not like paying a lot more or anything like that. I mean, I think this is a really great deal only because I think the Game Pass is really spectacular. It's Game Pass Ultimate too, so it's every all the things and the PC stuff too, which is what I have. I have Game Pass Ultimate. Even though I don't own an Xbox, but I still have one. I do work at Microsoft, so we get some perks from time to time. But I do have it on my PC, which is quite nice. So I think, you know, out of the box, if you're just looking at $20 a month to play hundreds of games, if you just didn't even want to buy new games, right? The games that you could play in all access with the Game Pass is quite spectacular. So I think it's a quite a good deal. And the ability to just say, oh, I'm also just going to upgrade to the next console, it's pretty neato too, I think. So I think that's kind of cool. Yeah.
I think this is a great option if maybe you're a student or you're younger and you don't necessarily have a couple hundred bucks to throw down. Mm. When I was younger, I would just be stupid and buy it anyway and put it on a card. And this kind of option allows you to not be stupid, probably pay less overall because you're not paying interest on it, and still enjoy having the console without that added burden of debt over your head. So this is a good thing.
Yeah. Now, talking about awesome things that would even be included in that, if you got Xbox Live Gold, which you know I do, I don't know why I keep paying for it. I want that number to keep increasing. I don't know. You can get a whole bunch of new games. Here's the onslaught of upcoming games for Games with Gold from October 16th to November 15th, which is now. Friday the 13th, The Game for Xbox One. November 1st to the 30th, you can get Sherlock Holmes, The Devil's Daughter on Xbox One. November 1st to the 15th, Star Wars Jedi Starfighter, Xbox 360. Now, do you also get that for Xbox One if it is an Xbox 360 game?
Yeah, absolutely. All these Xbox 360 games are compatible with Xbox One.
Okay. And you also get on November 16th through the 30th, Joyride Turbo. Joyride's a fun game. It's a good one. Jedi Starfighter, also a good game. And November 16th through December 15th, I hate how they stagger all these. It's ridiculous. I think you've only complained about them since the beginning of
every
this
time,
podcast.
Every time we talk about it.
Is the final station for Xbox One. So there you go. Now, I assume if it's Xbox One, you can't get it on the Xbox 360. But
correct.
I'm curious how many subscribers are still on the Xbox 360.
Yeah, you know, I don't think that that's a number they've released. It would be really interesting. And we were talking about how now that they've decided that they are no longer going to actively make any original Xbox games forward compatible anymore, when are they going to stop supporting Xbox 360 stuff? You know, it has to be coming at some point.
Yeah, you know, my game got ported to the Xbox One. Did you know that?
Your game?
Yeah, Shred Nebula, the game I made for the Xbox 360 when I worked at a studio.
I didn't even know that you had a game. So how awesome is that?
Oh, yeah. I worked at a game studio in college, Crunch Time Games, and we made a game called Shred Nebula. It is a top-down space shooter. You can look at cool credit graphics of me with, like, I think I had, like, big chops at the time, which is cool. It was in the game studio in Chandler, Arizona. And that's the game studio that I worked at. That's when I decided I didn't want to make games anymore. So whatever that is worth. But it was a very good game. And it was for Xbox 360. It was the Xbox Live Arcade era when Xbox Live Arcade was making a big hit. And it didn't do very well, unfortunately. And the game studio kind of fizzled at that point. I actually now work with the gentleman that used to run the studio. He now works at Microsoft in the game studio department. But they ended up somehow magically bringing it over through the power. Like the game, we used to have a restriction where the game used to have to be under 100 megs, and the whole game was 60 megabytes because the Xbox 360 had all these restrictions. Mm-hmm. And with the emulation backport, Shred Nebula is now 1 gigabyte. Which is, so it's like, it's like obviously like they no longer care, because they it's crazy. I don't know if I'm allowed to talk about how the thing works, but like it's crazy how it works and like how they make these games work. It's very I don't know if it's public knowledge or not, so I shouldn't talk about it, but it's amazing that they get this thing to work in general.
It's basically an emulator built onto the game.
Okay, cool. Yeah, yes. I mean, that's how I would describe it. Yes. So that together, it's like boom. But you can go get Shred Nebula. It's on there. It's on the Xbox One if you want to live the legacy of James Montemagno.
There you go.
Yeah.
Very cool. That's what I learned tonight. That's awesome.
There you go.
All right. Well, since you're here and you're from Microsoft, we're going to do something we normally don't do, which is just to throw in some Microsoft news, because there's some new hardware that people have been talking about lately. The reviews are out for the latest Surface Pro, the Surface Pro X. And I would say that they're kind of mixed reviews. And I look at this very much the way that I looked at the reviews for the iPad Pro when it came out. Mm. When people reviewed the iPad Pro, they took to heart, perhaps a little too literally, the marketing noise that Apple was making about how this can be a laptop replacement. And in some cases, it can be. But what most of the reviews for the iPad Pro pointed out is that you cannot live on an iPad Pro alone. And I think that's kind of the message that I'm getting from the Surface Pro X, that it's a good device. It's a solid device. It's very useful. It may not be right for everybody. Like if you're a power gamer, or if you need some heavy rendering capability or something like that, it's not designed for that. But if what you need is a computer that you use in your workplace or to go from meeting to meeting or conferences or whatever else, this is a really good solution. And remember, all the Surfaces are, well, the Surface devices, not the Surface laptops, but the Surface and Surface Pros are convertible devices. So it's essentially a tablet with a removable keyboard.
Yeah, and maybe they put the Pro on it. I'm not in marketing, or I'm not in the Surface division. There's lots of divisions at Microsoft. Maybe the Pro, by putting the name, the word Pro in it, it puts it in this category that everything else is judged against, right? So if it was a Surface X, it wouldn't then be judged against the other Surface Pro line, like the Surface Pro 7. And reading all the reviews, everybody loves the hardware. Dieter over at The Verge quote said it is the best laptop and best tablet that he has felt in an entire year. The entire year best. It is beautiful. The anodized material that they use on it is just spectacular. The new keyboard that has a little holding place for the pen that charges the pen with a little magnet, keeps it in the actual keyboard, like really elegant. So he really enjoyed the hardware. That's what I've heard over and over again. Best hardware. Now, the special thing about the Surface Pro X to be aware of it is that this is running an ARM processor. This is not the first Windows device to run an ARM processor, but
right,
it is one of the first from Microsoft in some time. And this is running a special SQ1 chip, which the team worked with Qualcomm on together, which means that it's LTE enabled. So if you're talking like going meeting to meeting, going around, Dieter sort of mentioned this is like the CEO or the vice president type of, you know, manager, you know, type mm-hmm. of device where you're heavily in Word and Office and an email all day, but you're not playing games on it. Basically, it's like you're not playing games, because on ARM, the applications need to be either compiled for ARM or use an x86 emulation layer. And his review of it is obviously still early days, was that he was very impressed with it. All the reviews, even Mary Jo is like very impressed by that it can do it, but not everything is 100% compatible. And that sums to be the issue. So if you're looking to be, I want to do all, I want to be all, I want to do everything, then it's probably not for you. But if you fall into the category that it's there, then great. In fact, you know, I own the Surface Go. And I try to play some games on it, even from
entry
the store.
Or high end?
High end, obviously. Okay. Come on now.
Well, right. And when you said that it's been a while since they came out with an ARM device, I'm like, well, the Go.
No, it's x86. That's x86.
The low end one?
No, they're both x86. I didn't
realize that. Okay.
An Intel Gold processor. The last device that I think that I can remember us shipping with an ARM processor would be the Surface Win, the RT devices, the Win RT devices.
No. I have a Surface 3 that's an ARM device.
Surface 3 RT device?
Yeah.
Oh, they weren't the Pro or the Non.
It's not an RT device. It's an ARM device.
Oh, really?
Not a Pro. Just the regular Surface 3.
Interesting. Okay, so it's been 4 years.
Been a while.
So it's been a while. So the Go's are x86, but like I booted up Zen Pinball on it, Pinball FX, and like it just crashed right away. I was like, yeah, because it's a Surface Go. Hello, James. Duh. It barely has a processor in it. But, you know, I can actually boot up Visual Studio and VS Code and browsers, and it does exactly what I need it to do for lightweight stuff, which is what it was designed for. So I think this instance, this is what it's designed for. But that said, I was sort of going back and forth between buying the Surface Pro X and a Surface Pro 7 for the wife this Christmas, because when she travels for work and she wants like a pro developer machine for herself, I was like, oh, like this could be really cool because it's so beautiful and it's just the shape of it. But I think I'm going to go with the Surface Pro 7 for. I'm just going to spec it out for the money. It seems like that is the pro device, if you will, where the Surface Pro X, sexiest hardware, beautiful hardware, but, you know, maybe based on your usage isn't exactly for you. But again, I think you make a good point of trying to compare it to like a iPad Pro type of thing too. So
yeah. So it you know, I'm really eager to see. I can never remember the names of these devices; they're so confusing. But I'm eager to see what the reviews are like when that dual screen device comes out. I think that's going to be really interesting. I don't want one, but I do think it's unique in the space, and it'll be fun to see like how that gets received and what people come up with for it and stuff like that.
Yeah, the Neo and the Duo. That's what you're looking for there.
Yep.
Yeah, the Neo and Duo, which I'm very excited about as well. I don't know if I'll buy them right away, but I'm very intrigued to buy them, I would say, just off of public knowledge of what the Windows 10 X operating system will look like on that from what they've shown. And they showed them again at Ignite, by the way. So they showed them twice now at the Surface event and the Ignite keynote with Satya. I think it's very exciting because it's just a new form factor. You know what I mean? I think that's the thing with the Surface Pro X is it's not a new form factor. So it's, you have a Apple to Apple to compare it with, where the Neo Duo, which obviously the Duo is running Android, so it's completely different whole beast. But even the Neo, there could be these really unique experiences that are really game changer that would really set it over the top compared to a Surface Pro device. And they're used for different things. But yeah, that magnetic keyboard really got me, that Wonder Bar or whatever they have. I'm very intrigued, and I hope developers really take advantage of it. So more than the Touch Bar, because come on, a Touch Bar.
I think it could be cool. I worry anytime Microsoft comes out with a Windows variant for devices because that has historically not gone well. Mm. So we'll see. Yeah, we'll see. All right. Well, that is it for our news, and that's it for our kind of throwback to old entertainment 2.0, talking about Microsoft stuff. Hey, I have a question for you, James. How do you listen to podcasts?
I listen to podcasts with Pocket Casts. That's what I use. I use Pocket Casts.
Cool. You know what? We're there. We're on Pocket Casts.
No, are you? We're right there. Yep. Boom. I just found you right here. I just subscribed.
I listen on iTunes, and I don't, or whatever it's called these days, Apple Podcasts. And I don't know why I put myself through that. I may be switching.
Overcast. You should get Overcast.
Yeah, I think I might end up switching to Overcast. But we're in all of those places. So if you're looking to tell a friend how they can find Entertainment 2.0, it's really easy. Just tell them to go to their favorite podcatcher and they'll find us there. Before we're out of here, we like to share what's going on in our entertainment centers. And as everyone knows, I watch a lot of television. So it's been 2 weeks. Let's try and run through this as quickly as possible. We are in the fall crazy season. I've been keeping up with The Conners, Superstore, Modern Family, The Good Place. They've all been good, fine, nothing great. This Is Us in New Amsterdam have both been really good. Arrow and The Flash, I'm a season behind trying to catch up. I just made it to the crossover episode across all of the different series. So that's up next. I am up to date on Mr. Robot and Treadstone, two USA series that I love.
Is that how you're grouping these, by the way? I was curious, by the way, of how you're grouping these, because I just have everything in a single list, but Richard has really meticulously grouped things in very specific ways on the Google Doc.
Yeah, I mean, in most cases, these are shows that have some sort of affiliation with each other. Okay. That's why I kind of put them together. I've been watching Cheers recently because of the show Let's Talk About Cheers that I listen to. That is an amazing breakdown of the original show Cheers, done by a producer who lives in Hollywood and her TV writer husband. They analyze all of this stuff in Cheers that you just thought was a funny comedy. I mean, it's just fascinating to listen to.
I think that the two actresses from what's the one show with Dunder Mifflin and The Office.
Oh, The Office.
They started a podcast. The two actresses from it, and they're going episode by episode. Funnily enough, I didn't know about the Cheers one, but they're going episode by episode and doing a behind the scenes of every single episode of of The Office, which is very cool. I forget what it's called, but it's probably just sort of whatever The Office podcast is on their favorite podcast catcher. But that's cool. I didn't know they were doing that for Cheers. That's cool.
Yeah, it's awesome. It's called Let's Talk About Cheers. I highly recommend it. Also, I finished Black Mirror. I just kind of binged on season 5 and it was good. I think I liked season 5 better than I liked season 4, actually.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, there was less episodes.
Yes. It was a shorter season and I really felt like 4 dragged for some reason. And I think the episodes in season 5 were among themselves very different from each other. That said, I think probably one of my favorite episodes of all was the finale of season 4. Not Bandersnatch, but the actual season 4 finale, I think, was stunning. But overall, I think this was a really good show. So I'm glad I'm finally all caught up.
Yeah, I liked the Ashley 2 one, the Ashley O episode a lot. I thought that was good. The other ones are okay. Also, I thought Bandersnatch was okay. I think I would have liked it by itself. I kept getting frustrated because I had to keep going back and back. I did enjoy it, but sometimes I kind of realize with all those interactive Netflix shows, there's a reason that a TV, the goal of television is to sit there and watch it and not to interact
with it. Not have to make decisions.
Yeah, because it's called a video game. If I want something like that, I'll play a point and click adventure and then boom, boom. But anyways.
Yep. Because on Court Killers, they have been following the old episodes of the Larry Sanders Show. I have started watching that. I used to watch that years and years and years ago. So weird to watch. Unlike Cheers, which was a really high quality master that they have available for you to watch, the old episodes of the Larry Sanders Show look like crap. And so it's interesting to see the difference there. But I've been watching that and it's entertaining. I've always liked Gary Shandling. So it's a fun series. I've also started Jack Ryan. I'm very glad that started up again. I loved season two. That is back now on Amazon. We are up to the middle of Grace and Frankie season two now. And while we were talking about the Apple TV Plus stuff, I did watch the first episode of For All Mankind and the first episode of The Morning Show. Mm-hmm. I liked For All Mankind. I wanted to like it better than I did. I have good expectations for it, but it didn't grab me. There was a moment that I'm like, oh, wow, that was cool. But otherwise, it wasn't as amazing as I wanted for a pilot. And then The Morning Show, I thought, was great. The critics are complaining about this show. And I'm like, why? What are you expecting out of this show? And another podcaster that I know, we were kind of bantering about it on Twitter. And his response is Sorkin. People were expecting Sorkin. That's not what this is. So I didn't go in with that expectation, and I am really liking it. And they're hitting some very topical time, kind of timely topical matter. So I think it's going to be a good show, and I'm looking forward to diving into that more. I finished Star Trek Discovery season one and started season two, and wow, it's good. Everybody was right. It's really good.
This is the like latest Star Trek. I think my buddy Frank that I podcast with did, I think for season one, him and his buddy did like a recap, like immediately after every single one, like a breakdown of it. And he'd like put it on YouTube. It did well. I think he's a huge Star Trek fan. He was just like, it's very like, even if you don't like Star Trek, like, you will like this is what he told me.
I can see that. Although there's so many wonderful nuggets for people who know the original Star Trek, who watched the old series. They are very carefully and intentionally weaving a history in that will dovetail with the Star Trek that we know, not the Star Trek movies, which are a different timeline, the newer Star Trek movies, but the old Star Trek with the old characters, including, you know, everything that kind of went up to Next Generation. Of course, we have Picard coming in later this year. That's going to start on CBS All Access. I still refuse to pay the CBS All Access extortion fee. I purchased the episodes of Discovery Season 1 because I am not going to pay and give my money to tell CBS that it is legitimate for them to basically hold this show hostage to a streaming audience only.
Yeah.
So there's that. I started Stumptown. I mentioned last time that I had trouble getting through the first episode. So I'm looking forward to more after finishing the first one, but I haven't watched more yet. I think it has a lot of potential. It has a good cast for sure. I was watching one scene and I'm like, holy crap, everyone in this is a TV power hitter.
Yeah, it gets better. I would say overall, I the first episode was a little slow. We watched the first two or three episodes, and then I left for a few weeks for Europe for work. So we're a little bit behind, but it is one where I don't want to watch it super late at night. Like, you know, there's shows that you can watch right before bed, and there's shows that you don't want to watch. And it's not because it's super violent. It's just that I really want to pay attention to all the different aspects of what's going on. It's like a thinker almost.
And that's my problem, because the time that I get to watch TV is after all of this, right? Gotcha. So it's usually 10, 11 o'clock at night by the time that I sit down to watch some television. So yeah. And then finally, we watched a couple of movies, the live-ish version of The Lion King, which I liked. I thought it was good. I watched Superman Far From Home. I really enjoyed that. I thought they did a great job with that. I also watched Justice League, which was less good, but I wanted to see it.
Not great.
Yeah, but I did want to see it. I mean, one of the things that was really weird, I couldn't understand why the hell does Henry Cavill look so friggin' different. Mm-hmm. And I forgot that they CG'd his facial hair out. So his face looks like fake and younger in so many different scenes. And I'm like, why does he look so? Oh, right.
Yeah.
That was not a good decision.
No.
That they should have made him shave that, but maybe he wouldn't have done it because he needed it for something else. I don't know.
That's true. That's always crazy when you think about that, right? It's just like, but imagine someone's job, like your job is to CG off. Like that's your whole job is just to CG off.
And what did you do? Oh, I CG'd Henry Cavill's facial hair out.
But I bet like if you do it really, really good, I bet you would get rehired because I think that that happens all the time. Like just
can I just say this team did not.
No, but remember, didn't they do that for they did it for Superman in one scene in Superman versus Batman or whatever. Like they had to reshoot a scene. And I think they actually had to CG off his mustache because he refused because he was in the role where they had to refilm it. But he was doing a new movie. I swear, mm-hmm. I remember hearing that this happened. They had to CG that off. And like if you don't know, like you're probably like look over it. But then as soon as you pay attention, you're like, oh, OK, like I see what happened there.
It's so bad.
Yeah.
So bad. Anyway, the other thing that I watched from Apple TV Plus was the movie The Elephant Queen. It's phenomenal. Mm. I was so impressed by this movie. I described it on Twitter as The Lion King meets BBC Earth.
Ooh, that's cool.
It's the story of a family of elephants for real.
Mm-hmm.
But they give everyone names, so they're kind of personifying all these elephants as characters that you come to know and recognize throughout this documentary. It's phenomenal.
I like when they do that. I think they did that with, like, maybe it was Meerkat Manor, but the one that sticks out to me, they did that with the sloth documentary. It was like a 6-part documentary. It was like Meet the Sloths or something like that, and there was these sloths which were down in Costa Rica. And at the sloth sanctuary, and they all had names, all had things, and it was a whole thing. In fact, it was so good that Heather and I went to Costa Rica just to go visit the sloths.
No way.
Yep, we did. I have pictures with me and Buttercup. She's the queen of that place. And I swear, like, people are like, oh, why'd you come to Costa Rica? We're like, go to the sloth sanctuary to see the sloths. And like we want to go see Buttercup. And like, and that was totally it. And it was fantastic. It was legit. So like when you make those connections, you get to make those connections. And I think it pulls you in. So
yeah, that's very cool. All right. That finally is the end of my list of what I have been enjoying in my entertainment center. How about you, James?
Yeah, so I have a little bit less, but I will say that I have them in more episode quantity, perhaps, because I've been flying around a lot, like I said. And I've been using a lot of Netflix offline, so that has been my jam. So I have been keeping up to date a little bit with some. We got back. I've been keeping up with Superstore. Big fans of Superstore.
Mm-hmm.
And all episodes of Superstore are like pretty much the same. Like they're really good. They're good watching. Like, but not necessarily spectacular. I think the Halloween episode was pretty good.
I think it's probably the best of the season, actually.
Yeah.
But I don't think that. Except for that episode, the rest of the season has lived up to any of the past seasons.
No, I think that first season, a lot of the quirks of being there, the uniqueness of it being in this familiar superstore, if you will, like a Walmart or a huge Target, and the quirky things that people do is really funny. And now they can't really rely on that anymore because after 50 times it doesn't have the same impact, so they're trying to make the more connections.
Yeah. And did you notice they got rid of the vanity card gag at the end?
Oh, I didn't realize that. I guess they did. Yeah, huh.
So I don't know what's going on with that. It's almost like they're just kind of like, okay, we're just playing this out now.
Just playing it. Yeah, I unfortunately can't see too many more seasons of it, but yeah, we'll see where it goes. But I still enjoy it. I think it's a good show. We got really into The Masked Singer. Did we watch The Masked Singer?
I have no idea what that is.
Oh, my goodness. Go on Hulu. Watch season one of The Masked Singer. The Masked Singer is one of the most amazing singing shows ever. What they do is they have celebrities wear full outfit masks. Nobody knows who they are. Mm-hmm. No, like the people that are like voting, the host doesn't know who they are. Nobody knows who they are at all. And they go off and they do head-to-head battles against two different celebrities. It could be football players. It could be real life singers. It could be of the past. It could be of the present, anything. and they all have their unique identities, and they're revealing secrets, and they're trying to guess. So they have a bunch of different people up there of a comedy background, of music backgrounds. They're all trying to guess who they are through the whole season. And it's like mind blowing when they take it off, because they have these amazing like, sports announcers, and they have like these famous actors and like people that were scared to sing. But like behind a mask, they can do this. So season one, really fantastic. Season two, we're just getting into it. We're a few episodes by, but highly recommend The Masked Singer. So I literally guessed the winner by the very, very last final clue. They said one line that clicked in my head, and I said, it's blank. I'm not going to say it for the show, but I said, it's blank. And then they reveal themselves, and I freaked out. Like, I just, like, lost. It was so good.
That's cool.
So very, very good. So it's not like The Voice. It's not like those other shows. It's that they, you know, they're, and some of them are not professional singers, but that they will blow your mind. So very, very good. Season two is happening now. The Rookie. You got to have a cop show. I mean, all the time, there's always cop shows.
Yep.
You know, I love me some Nathan Fillion. I love The Rookie. I'm a huge fan. I'm catching up. I'm almost caught up on that. Have you watched The Rookie or no?
I've watched a couple episodes. It's not something that I've stuck with.
Didn't do it. I don't know. I'm just a huge Nathan Fillion fan. I can't help myself. This season is very, very good. Just the characters continue to develop. Some characters have gone, so it's very good. Now, I will say the things that I've gone into on Netflix, though, the first one is Inside Bill's Brain, the documentary series.
I want to see that so bad.
It is so unbelievably good. I cried. I broke down on the plane, like almost every episode. I learned so much. Not only, it's not just about Microsoft. You know, that's what people think. There's aspects about Microsoft, about Bill's early childhood, about his family, about his philanthropy. Each episode has a revolving story about one of the key things that Bill and Melinda and the Gates Foundation is attempting to do. And it is really a story, not necessarily just about just Bill, but about really Melinda, too, and the important part that Melinda plays in his past and in present with the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, because they're equal partners in that together. And what she brings into that and has brought into the past. And I learned so many new things. Just extremely well done. Three episodes, 50 minutes each. Highly recommended. Super duper good. Well produced. And it made me even more respectful of Bill, who I've always respected at an extremely high level of all the work great they're doing. And it's not all success. That's what I really like about this documentary series, is it's not all success. There's some failures and there's unknowns. And I think it's really good. And stuff that I didn't even know that the foundation was working on. So cool. I thought that was really cool. A lot of stuff.
Added that to my list literally yesterday.
Super good. Super duper good. And then the other show I watched in full, and I don't know why I finished it. You know, when you start something and you're like, I don't know why I'm watching this, but I guess I'll just hit the starts in 10 seconds button. You just keep going until the end.
That's why they do that.
It's what it was. And, you know, maybe because I had a lot of them download, but I watched Daybreak, which is a new original series on Netflix. This is a post-apocalyptic. You know, I am a sucker for zombies, but it's a post-apocalyptic zombie Mad Max style. But it's all of the kids survived and the adults, you know, perish or turn into zombies or like walkers, as they kind of call them, or ghoulies, as they call them. But it is a comedy drama. And that's sort of my issue with it, is that there's like serious parts and then not serious parts and like over the top, right, and kind of like crude parts. It does have our good friend Matthew Broderick in it. That would be the biggest star. So he plays one of the adults in it. Everyone else are up and coming actors and actresses. There's parts that I really like about it, but then parts I really hate about it. And you know, the IMDb and Metacritic are like 6 and 7s. And I'm like, yeah, it's like a 6. It's like a 6 out of 5, 5 out of 10, 6 out of 10. Not bad. Not great. It's one of those things where you don't take it very seriously, but also there's some really good elements to it. But then for every good element, there's like an equally not as great element to it too. But I did make it my way through it. I thought it was okay.
I had no desire to see this.
No, and I wouldn't even recommend, even if you're a huge zombie person. No, it's okay. I mean, there's not really not a real reason to watch it, to be honest with you.
You think it'll come back?
No. Doesn't need to. It's based off a, what are those things? Like The Walking Dead was based off of a graphic novel.
Yeah.
Same thing. So based off a graphic novel. I don't think it needs to. I think that they set it up at the end, totally come back to season two, but it doesn't really need to. And then because you're kind of like, well, maybe this is a show for teens, but then it's also not, because it's also very violent. And also, I don't know, there's some sexual parts of it, too. And you're like, I don't know. But one movie, since you watch a lot of movies, that I watched that I could highly recommend, Dolomite Is My Name. Fantastic movie. This is a movie documentary, you know. I would say this is Eddie Murphy. This is the life of Rudy Ray Moore, who played Dolomite in the movie Dolomite. And the movie Dolomite Isn't It My Name is a movie about how Rudy Ray Moore came to be through Eddie Murphy playing him, and a lot of great actresses. Wesley Snipes in it, Keegan-Michael Key, Craig Robinson, Mike Epps, a whole bunch of amazing actors and actresses in the movie. So very well done, but it also has the same seriousness and also quirkiness of Dolomite too. So it has some of that quirkiness built into it, which I appreciate. This is on Netflix. Highly recommend it. Very, very good. A very good movie. Very, very delightful. And not too long, maybe like a little bit over an hour and a half, an hour 40, maybe. So good stuff. That's what's been playing on my phone, actually. Basically.
Cool.
Yeah.
Good stuff. All right. Well, James, if people want to keep up with James Montemagno, they want more James because they don't get enough of it here at the DMZ anymore. And they're like, wait a minute, where do I get my James fix? How do they do that?
Yeah, best way to do it is you can follow me on Twitter at James Montemagno. If you're interested in Nintendo stuff, NintendoDispatch.com. If you're into development stuff, MergeConflict.fm. That's the podcast I have. And also, I live stream on Twitch every Friday at 2 o'clock Pacific for about 2 to 3 hours at twitch.tv/James Montemagno. I also do game streaming. Me, Michael and Christina, the three of us that do Nintendo Dispatch, we have a Twitch stream where we all stream randomly at times at twitch.tv/Nintendo Dispatch. So lots of places to find me on the internet. I try to be everywhere.
I don't know how you have the time.
No, I don't. I mean, it's literally 10 o'clock right now in a hotel room while I'm at a conference that I just worked for 15 hours. So there you go.
And thank you for doing that. We totally appreciate it.
Yeah.
All right. Well, these days I am still participating in the movie draft. And if you didn't have a chance to go out and see Zombieland 2 yet, then you should probably go see Dr. Sleep this coming weekend, because that too is in my draft and I have high hopes for that one. I think it's going to do well. So check that out if you're interested. And then just a reminder that while Josh is on leave, we're going to have a little bit of a weird schedule. Episodes may not come out on the same days that they usually do and with the same frequency, but I am going to try and get an episode out next week. I have a guest in town that you may be familiar with. So we're going to try and get him on and hopefully get an episode out next week as well. And then in a week or two after that, you can expect to hear Josh's sweet voice back here hosting as primary on Entertainment 2.0. And if you're missing Josh, you can talk to him, hear from him out on Twitter at Josh Pollard. You can hear from me or talk to me on Twitter at Richard Gunther. And we collectively post at Digital Media Zone. And sometimes I accidentally post a political tweet and then delete it real quickly because I have too many accounts that I'm juggling all at once. But anyway, we're also on Instagram and on Facebook. And my other show, Home On, has a new episode out now with Steve Savagian. He's the CEO of Anova Culinary. And we have a really good discussion about what we saw and what we see happening in the connected kitchen space while we were out at the Smart Kitchen Summit. So that's really interesting, and you should check that out if you haven't already heard that. We normally record live on Tuesdays, but we're not doing that right now. So hang on, we'll have our live episodes back when Josh is back on the air. And that, my friend, is going to do it for episode 502. James, thanks so much.
Yeah, thank you for having me. As always, a privilege and an honor.
I'm Richard Gunther, and we thank you for listening to Entertainment 2.0. Goodbye.